What the EFL is this? We're a new podcast focusing on all things Football League. Each week, we'll bring you the very best analysis, insight and expert opinion. On this episode, there's managerial movements between Sunderland and Stoke. O'Neill, gone. O'Neill, in. We round up the best of the weekend's action, take a look at two standout loanees, and another EFL legend takes the fit and proper guest test. As potent as a Preston strike force, as calm and rational as a Nathan Jones post-match interview, this is What the EFL. Welcome in then to this, the second ever episode of What the EFL. I'm your host, Matt Davis-Adams. Each week, I'm joined by two of my long-tenured teammates and Football League experts. Former Arsenal Southend and Stevenage winger turned broadcaster and writer Adrian Clark is back with us. Morning, Adrian.
Good morning. Yeah, great to be back. although the day hasn't got off to a great start. We're hosting a party this afternoon for my wife. It's her birthday tomorrow, a little family get-together. Got my best party shirt ready, a little bit leery, bit of a Hawaiian number. Bought it at the start of the summer. Nah, it's not fitting. Bad news. I think the detox starts tomorrow.
Yeah, back to pre-season training for you. What the EFL are you looking forward to talking to us about today, Clarky?
Well, lots and lots of stuff, of course. But yeah, a little bit of a scouting report on Charlton's exciting loanee, Jesserin Rahsaki from Crystal Palace. Been taking a deeper dive on him.
Looking forward to tripping over his name repeatedly as the podcast goes on. Also with us, the one-time Swindon, Ipswich, Exeter and Moor striker turned Saturday night TV linchpin Sam Parkin. Sam, what the EFL are you looking forward to talking about today?
Hello, guys. I am looking forward, finally, to talking about Tino Andrin and the two best goals ever seen in the EFL, considering we ran out of time on Saturday night and I had to spend my minute and a half talking about a penalty that wasn't given for Will Boyle's assault on Carlon Grant. So I'm looking forward to giving Tino the love that he deserves.
Yeah, more on that later. I might even break out my Steve Bruce impression if you're a particularly unlucky listener. Many thanks to those of you who followed us on Twitter already. It's at EFL Whatther if you want to join the ever-growing army. We'll incorporate some tweets into the pod as we roll on through the weeks too, I'm sure. If you want to sponsor the show, email whattheefl@yahoo.com and we can hook you up with that. Right, later we'll be joined by Jamie Mackey and we'll hear about Clarkey's meeting with Logan Paul. But first, let's look at some of the big news stories from the EFL. Sting. All right, we're going to start with the Stoke managerial drama. They've now confirmed the appointment of Alex Neil on a three-year contract after the sacking of Michael O'Neill on Thursday and Neil's subsequent resignation from Sunderland thereafter. First off, Adrian, were they right to sack Michael O'Neill? Results not great, but it's very early in the season and they did back him in the transfer market, so the timing's a little odd.
Definitely the timing's a little bit odd because they've allowed him to bring in Liam Delap, Dwight Gale, Tarek Fosu recently, Gavin Kilkenny, etc. So a lot of players have come in, remoulded the team, and they've given up on it quite early, haven't they? They were poor at Millwall on the opening day. They weren't very good at Huddersfield. And the results have been up and down. I think the issue with Stoke is pretty simple. They can't tread water in the Championship any longer. And the feeling was that the progress wasn't being made and that they'd win some, they'd lose some, but ultimately they'd fall short. I do actually feel that Stoke City needs a new energy, someone to enliven what is a pretty decent squad. It was just all going a little bit flat.
Sam, what about the Alex Neil angle on this then? What do you make of his conduct here? Is it fair enough if he personally is going to double his money, as has been reported, and get a big budget? Or should he have stuck it out, given the faith that Sunderland showed in him in bringing him in last season?
I don't know. It's really difficult. I think I just scribbled down a few ideas that I've been thinking about the last few days. I think it boils down to ambition for a manager, what you can achieve. Promotions, etc., managing at the highest level possible, a contract, being looked after financially, making a nice life for your family and your future. I suppose location comes into it. And maybe if you've played for the club, if you've got that affiliation with a club, well, that's not the case with Alex Neil. I don't think the location is probably going to be a big issue here, although I have read some stuff that his family still may be in kind of the Lancashire area. So it may be suiting him. I'm speculating a little bit there. So I think it comes down to his own ambition. Where does he feel that he can make a real success of things? And the contract, I think, probably equally as important here, the financial aspect here. But I don't know, there's a part of me that thinks maybe the ownership is a factor as well. You know, Sunderland, possibly if they were to continue on this upward trajectory, they would want someone slightly more flamboyant, a bigger name maybe. And I think it's a safe pair of hands, isn't it? The ownership at Stoke City. So that's what I'm thinking. But, you know, we're never going to really know. There's something going on behind the scenes. He's not happy with what he's got to play with at Sunderland in terms of possibly the playing squad and the ambitions moving forward. So he's felt Stoke's a better option right now. We're never going to really know. But it was a surprise. And you just have to kind of back his decision, I suppose, when he's weighed all this up.
There are reports that he's on a rolling 12-month contract. And if that's true, why would you do that if you're Sunderland? Okay, it saves you money if things go wrong and you sack them, but it's not a great way to look at it. You wouldn't have Ross Stewart on a 12-month rolling contract. You wouldn't have other star assets on the pitch on that kind of deal. And for me, Alex Neil was one of their star assets. I think he just needed to be looked after a little bit better. And look, he's earning more money. He's guaranteed more money if things go wrong. I kind of can't blame him, but it did feel like a big shock at the time.
So who's going to come in at Sunderland, you reckon, then, Sam? Tony Mowbray seems to be the favourite. Sean Dyche feels like he might be quite a good fit. And of course, I'm legally obliged to link Roy Keane with the Sunderland vacancy every time it comes up.
Yeah, I'm sure the fans would love that. He was, you know, phenomenal in his spell there. So I don't know. I think that the ship's probably sailed on that front in terms of Roy Keane getting back into management. I'm not sure that would be a brilliant fit for the new ownership at Sunderland. Sean Dyche, he's always going to get linked with the jobs. I think the football's been, you know, pretty good under Alex Neil. And Sean Dyche, in terms of his management, has only really known one way. So that would be a bit of a peculiar fit, I would say, right now. But it's not to say that Sean Dyche couldn't be flexible in the future. Out of those names, Tony Mowbray seems a better fit. It would split opinion because Tony Mowbray is, been there and done it. He's not seen as a particularly
exciting manager.
He's
seen as boring,
manager.
Sam, isn't he? That's that.
I don't know.
Is he seen as boring? Like, I don't know. In terms of his personality? I like the football.
I think he comes across really well, Tony Mowbray. I think he comes across as the type of bloke who the young lads probably really enjoy playing for. I bet he's really, you know, a good man manager. It was an exciting team. He bedded a lot of young players in at Blackburn as well. And I just think, you know, let's not get carried away. Sunderland have been in League One for five or six seasons or whatever it's been. Tony Mowbray has been managing successfully for the majority in the second tier. So I don't think there can be snobbery about, you know, what Tony Mowbray has achieved and where Sunderland are right now. But I get it that the Sunderland fans probably on the upward trajectory they're on want a bit more excitement at the Stadium of Light. And I think that's fair.
Yeah, well, time will tell as to who gets the Sunderland job. There'll be plenty of candidates for it meanwhile. Elsewhere in managerial news, this morning as we record, Jim Bentley has been appointed as the new Rochdale boss. He's replacing Robbie Stockdale, who was sacked on the 18th of August. Rochdale without a win in their first six games. Well, I'm going to be lazy here, Clarkie, and say, well, it seems like a good fit, which I'm basing on the fact that Jim Bentley seemed to have worked exclusively in the northwest of England. Therefore, why not tick Rochdale off the list?
Exactly. He's been at Morecambe. He was at Morecambe for a long, long time, wasn't he? And he, by and large, did pretty well. He's been at Fylde most recently, did okay. Didn't sort of blow things up crazily in terms of good form, but it was solid enough. So yeah, we'll see what happens. But they needed to get somebody in quick because the team is desperate for wins and points.
While we're talking League Two managers, Newport boss James Robery revealed he had a pacemaker fitted before the start of the season after a blockage in his heart was detected during a routine checkup run by the LMA. He said, "It was something I was not expecting at the age of 37. Nothing to do with football management, nothing to do with being stress related. It's purely down to something that has been picked up." He said he let the players know at the last minute, Sam, before he was going in to have the operation. What kind of effects would that have on a group of players? I guess it might galvanize things a little bit, you know, if he comes back as he has done successfully and is straight back at work. But you'd feel a bit more of an affinity with your gaffer, would you, if he'd been through something like that? Or is it just not something that affects players either way?
No, I think you would, especially as he's probably a similar age to some of the elder statesmen in that group. So that would have come as a real shock. Yeah, and they'll be concerned about him, I'm sure. So I probably want to do well for him and give him some relaxed Saturday afternoons and Tuesday nights in the weeks and months ahead. And they've certainly done that. Yeah, and I'd imagine his man management, his closeness with the players would probably be very, very apparent given his background in the game. Very much one of these new age of coaches, and you know, highly thought of. There was rumours about him going to QPR as well. So in the summer and links with various other clubs. So hopefully, you know, this scare is behind him and he can go on and achieve what a lot of people expect him to.
Yeah, I mean, the club has suffered from sort of heart issues in the past, hasn't it? Fraser Franks and Mark O'Brien have both had to retire with heart issues. So it's sort of, they know all about that problem there. But isn't it good that the LMA tests these managers? It could have saved his life. It's amazing. And it's such a positive that the League Managers Association look after their own in such a proactive way.
All right. So that was the news. Next today, we'll run through some of the key results from the weekend's action. A weekend review then. We're going to have a quick run through some of the key games. Middlesbrough 2, Swansea 1 is the one that Adrian wants to talk about. Both threatening to be Bad Vibes FC, but Borough on the up after claiming their first win of the season. Clarky, I'm not convinced that Riley McGree isn't a made-up name, but you can tell me something more interesting about this game, I'm sure.
it feels made up, doesn't it? But yeah, big contribution with the opening goal. And they needed it, didn't they, Middlesbrough? They needed this so badly. It's been such an unexpectedly flat start to the campaign. He made changes. Chris Wilder, he made an enforced one in goal. Liam Roberts came in for Zach Steffen, and he did well. But I think the big call was putting Paddy McNair back into the back three. I think he's absolutely tailor-made for that wide centre-back position in the Chris Wilder team. Him, Lenihan, and Matt Clark, another newbie there, who signed from Brighton. I think that back three should have promotion vibes written all over it, really. And I'll tell you what, if you look at the three in front as well, Howson, Mowat and Crooks, I don't know if you'll find six more solid players down the spine of a field on a championship football pitch as those guys. And then, of course, you've got the wing-backs and the forwards to go and do their thing. Howson, by the way, has made more ball recoveries than anyone else outfield in the championship this season. So yeah, look, it was a scruffy win, 2-1. Obviously, very bad day for Swansea, who had Cabango sent off. We'll talk about that later. Just a little word on Cameron Congreve, the youngster, made a mistake for the goal, loose square pass, and he got hooked on 30 minutes, and that is brutal from Russell Martin. But look, Russell Martin is a manager under pressure. And I suppose he, from his angle, he hasn't got time to sort of, you know, if he sees something's wrong, he has to make those tough calls. So really feel sorry for Congreve, but big, big win for Borough. And I think they'll come good now. That spine is solid.
All right. I feel better about having tipped them to get promoted now. But yeah, Swansea bottom three ahead of their midweek trip to Stoke, and taking a player off after half an hour, that maybe suggests that the manager's made the wrong decision rather than it's the player's fault himself. Sam, your championship pick, known as Huddersfield versus West Brom. I'm going to call it Tino Angerin 2, Jed Wallace 2, and the worst penalty call of Steve Bruce's career. The two goal scorers here obviously taking the focus, and actually could be two of the key players in the championship this season, couldn't they? We know all about Wallace's quality, but Andrew, somebody who you and I have watched at close quarters for Chelsea, and he's a player if he can stay fit, which has been a big if so far in his young career.
Yeah, just to give you a low blow on a Monday morning, Matt, I think had he been fit, fully fit for that playoff campaign back in the last season, that could have given Huddersfield a different dynamic in that final. I thought he could have been a real difference maker. So they're seeing that now. Two unbelievable goals. I think in stature, he's very similar to Loftus-Cheek. Yeah, and in style, what he can do with the ball, going beyond people. These were his first EFL goals apart from a penalty, I believe. So, I mean, the first one, me and Jamie Mackey spoke about it at the weekend. It seemed to be gathering pace as it hit the net. If you'd have moved the goal back another 15 yards, I think it still would have smashed into the rigging. It was an incredible strike with very little backlift. So, yeah, he's going to be very important for them. And I think having individual quality in the final third in open play is a real bonus for Huddersfield. We know about the set piece threat, and Sorba Thomas actually was much better in that regard at the weekend. 50% completion rate with his deliveries, twice as good as his average so far this season. So that's improving as well. Defensively, not so sure at all. It's still quite a sophisticated setup, kind of 4-3-3 with the ball into a 5-4-1 without the ball. So a bit of a hybrid system, which we saw through Corbrand last year, but the deficiency in defence is definitely evident, hence how West Brom were able to get back into the game and probably had enough chances to win it in the second half. But moving on to Jed Wallace, yeah, I think his performances have been there, but so important to get those first goals for the new club. And it was amusing, the first one, you could see he was doing everything in his power not to celebrate, you know, 2-0 behind, getting one back. He was desperate to do something stupid, but he just tailored it and then went wild for the second one. So, yeah, he's still going to be vitally important. Still massive question marks as to whether they need a new striker. I mean, Carlon Grant was very peripheral in this game. Fewest touches out of any player that completed the 90. I think he only had five touches in the box, couple of attempts. But I think there's a real contrast in what he does at the Hawthorns and what he does away from home. So going back to me and Clarkie's conversation last week, it's maybe horses for courses for Steve Bruce. If he can get a more physical striker, a more hold-up player to play in those away games, that may be a way he could go to give Carlon Grant the minutes at the Hawthorns and not so much away from home. But yeah, probably a point better for Huddersfield, given there was a glaring penalty that the referee should have given late on.
Yeah, Steve Bruce said, it's the biggest penalty I've ever seen. Everybody in the crowd knew it was a penalty. Well, didn't get it, unfortunately. let's go into League One. Cambridge 4, Burton 3. Adrian, good luck in summing this up in timely and precise fashion. Burton in front after 11 seconds, had a man sent off, led three times, lost. Sam Smith got a hat trick. Wow.
It was a bonkers game. And my dad was there. H was there, Harry Clark. He's got a season ticket. This is how much my dad loves football. He doesn't support Cambridge, but he just misses going to watch games. So he's bought a season ticket for him and my mum, and they rocked up at the Abbey, and they were thoroughly entertained. So I've tapped him up for some info, and he's given me some great little bits. But yeah, I think the first one to say is well done, Harrison Dunk, who's playing sort of attacking left back. He basically tormented Johnny Smith, drew two fouls out of him inside the first 10 minutes, got him sent off, and it puts them in a great position. But the player he keeps raving about is not necessarily Sam Smith. He said the hat trick was great. He's really quick and lively up front, but it's Ironside. And we've bigged him up before, haven't we, on previous podcasts. Ironside is such an underrated player. His hold-up play is just out. Standing, and it was him who backed into the defender to sort of create the space to set it back for Liam O'Neill, who hit a brilliant winning goal. Prior to that, the equaliser, Liam O'Neill had come off the bench, played one of the passes of the season. I think it was a Champions League level goal. I really do. The pass, the run from Sam Smith, and the way that he volleyed it on the run. If PSG or Bayern Munich had done that, would still be raving about it. So well done to Cambridge United. It's been a great start to the season. And the other thing in this game, I think they're a better team on transitions, but because it was 11v10, they had all of the ball, 70%, but they still found a way to go and win the game. Made heavy weather of it, but they won it. And yeah, it's been a great start to the season for them.
Yeah, quite the contrast to Burton, who've conceded the most goals in the EFL. Sam, Cheltenham versus Oxford is your League One pick. I don't know if it's just me, only learning this today, and apologies if I'm breaking this to you on air, guys, but it's no longer the Johnny Rock Stadium. It's now the Completely Suzuki Stadium, which, I mean, the addition of the word completely is easing things a little there, but still, it's no Johnny Rocks. In terms of the game, Sam, Oxford really needed that, right? Only their second win of the season.
Yeah, that was a massive win for Carl Robinson. I was at the Palace game last week and he was probably let off the hook a little bit in defeat because they had certainly seven or eight youngsters in the squad. And interestingly, James Golding kept his place in the starting lineup. He's 17 years old, right wing back, right of a midfield four. He was actually hooked at half time to bring on Matt Taylor. It didn't necessarily go to plan for that young man, but he showed loads in that Crystal Palace game, as did another young player called Josh Johnson. That's someone to look out for. He played as a holding midfielder. This game, all about Cameron Brannigan, I think, because they're not creating much in open play. So a very fortuitous penalty award to win the game, but a magnificent free kick from Brannigan to get them out of the mire, really, because there are question marks about Carl Robinson. There's a bit of a shift in the formation in the last couple of games. Finlay came in at centre-half. That was his best game. McGuane complimenting Brannigan brilliantly in the midfield. So I don't think it was a brilliant performance. They're still not creative enough. He still hasn't got that formula in the front areas, but the win was all important here. And Brannigan, talismanic performance from him. He had the most shots, six attempts, four on the target, obviously scored two goals. And going deeper, having the freedom to get the ball off the back three and progress it up the pitch, he's a really talented boy. And they're still getting away without having that kind of midfield enforcer in there, Brannigan and McGuane doing a share of the dirty work, really. So huge win. I think it was worth highlighting because I don't think they're going to sack Carl Robinson, but it may come to a stage where Carl Robinson feels that he's had enough there, really, and it's time for a fresh change.
You mentioned a struggling open play. One open play goal this season for Oxford. It's a big issue.
Yeah, meanwhile, Cheltenham struggling to readjust now. They're duffless. Five defeats from seven in all comps for them and only one win so far. Meanwhile, in League Two, Leighton Orient continue to set the pace. Hartlepool are still without a win. This after Orient beat them 4-2 at Brisbane Road on Saturday. Adrian Ritchie-Wellens has really turned them round, hasn't he? Terrific job he's doing there.
Yeah, no surprises here at all with the result. Hartlepool were poor travellers last season and it seems that they've, different players, but the same kind of problems on the road. The reason I wanted to talk about this, as well as to say that Wellens has made them more exciting, more vibrant. They look fitter, faster. They've got outstanding XG and open play, the best in League Two. You know, really like the forward guys with Paul Smythe and Theo Archibald and Charlie Kelman down the middle. This was a sensational centre-forward performance from Kelman. I think Sam would have been proud of it. You know, running the channels, he was pulled down for a pen, scored a goal, he got himself an assist. He just terrorised the Hartlepool centre-halves. And he's only 20. He's been around donkey's years. I heard about him ages ago because he was at Southend and then he got sold before he'd really played any games. He's obviously on loan from Queen's Park Rangers. Very, very good performance from him. And I think that Leighton Orient look excellent.
Yeah, looking good for Orient, that's for sure. Also looking good for Salford. They and Stevenage been two of the early season pace setters in League Two. Salford up to fourth after they got the W here, courtesy of Ryan Watson's stoppage time winner. You expect them both to be there or thereabouts come May, Sam, but Salford in particular, it looks like maybe this will be the season after a few near misses.
I do. I think it's very rare to be reading about a game at the weekend, especially the way that social media runs away with itself, and see two sets of supporters kind of like, do you know what, that was a really good game. And it was unfortunate that we lost in the dying embers of the game. That's the Stevenage perspective, and Salford fans, you know, delighted with the maximum points. Amusing, I thought, that Stevenage have scored four goals in the last 10 minutes of games, and that's given them an additional 6 points. All their second half goals have come in the last 10 minutes. So it was a case of Stevenage getting Stevenaged, basically. So I think they had to just take it with a little bit of a pinch, really. That's going to happen through the season. I thought offensively they lost a little bit of impetus because Danny Rose went off in the first half. So that probably affected them to a degree. And I thought McElhenney on the other side of it, coming on for 25 minutes, 19 touches he had in that time on the pitch, really terrorised Stevenage. And again, loads of plaudits for Salford, the way they set up Bolton and Toure in the wide areas. Loads of joy. And it was a brilliant goal from Ryan Watson. You could see the way it set up as it rolled to him. It was absolutely perfect to be struck. And it was a goal. It was a really fitting way to end what was a really good game between two good sides. And my final note on it was I loved the ref going and taking a seat next to Steve Evans to reprimand him for something that was said in the first half. Nice touch. And Steve Evans seemed to take it on board, which is maybe an indication of how you need to treat the big man.
Yeah, you're going to be there a while, aren't you? So you might as well get comfy, I suppose. All right, that was the weekend that was. Next up, another EFL legend takes our fit and proper guest test. Now then, if you listened to our first episode last week, thanks. Also, you might notice a pattern here. Will the subject of the fit and proper guest test always be whoever was sat next to Sam on the ITV sofa the previous Saturday evening? Well, the only way to find out is to listen to us every week. It's certainly the case today as we welcome a man who played over 400 games in the Football League. Jamie Mackie, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on. Yes, I think Parks' recruitment goes along that line. Whoever he's working with, he nabs them for his show.
We're very grateful to him for doing that too. Right, we're going to crack straight on with a fit and proper guest test. Couple of quick fire questions for you, Jamie. First of all, can you name all the EFL clubs you played for in order?
Yes, I think I probably can. Well, I started at Wimbledon, as we once knew it, and then went to Milton Keynes, part of the transition there. And then I went down to Exeter City, and then on to local rivals, Plymouth, up to QPR. And then I left QPR to go to Nottingham Forest. And then I spent a season on loan at Reading. And then I signed back for QPR and I finished my time at Oxford United.
Absolutely spot on.
Didn't he do well?
Yeah, really good. Who do you support, Jamie?
Well, you know what? I was speaking to Parks about this the other night. When I was growing up, I grew up in Surrey and both my brothers were United fans growing up in sort of, I was born in 85 and then through the 90s where, to be honest, they were big Glory fans, as we say it, because they just won everything. They were the best side. But I absolutely loved football and there wasn't a club that was directly close to us. And so I can't say I had a passion for one side, if I'm being honest.
All right, that's nice. Just for the love of the game, like it. You mentioned the transition, Wimbledon, MK Dons. What was it like being part of that? Because it's a unique thing that's happened in English football.
Yeah, it was. I think now I look back at it and I realise how unique it was. But now, at the time, I was 18 years old. I just made my debut for Wimbledon. We're in the Championship and they were selling a lot of players just because of the financial situation. If I'm being honest, I was probably quite selfish in the sense that, well, I was getting a game probably earlier than I maybe would have done or certainly would have done. And I'm just desperate to play in the league. So it was very strange in terms of what was going on at the club. But I think it was probably a benefit being a young lad and being probably very naive to the situation where I just sort of took to it and moved up to Milton Keynes. When I look back, it was obviously very unique and a lot more went into it than I certainly thought.
Jamie, we're going to be talking a little bit later about the difficulties faced by young players when they first move out of home, etc. Considering Daryl DK put in dishwasher tablets in his washing machine the other day. When you went down to the West Country, I'm thinking with my kind of Exeter hat on when I spent a year down there at the end of my career, was that the making of you really when you went down there? And how did you find it being away from home? I presume for the first time over a long period.
Yeah, 100%, mate. I think that it was definitely the making of me. Like I touched on it there. I made my debut at 18 and we were in the Championship and I was game. I was enthusiastic, but I certainly wasn't probably ready to play football Parks. I hadn't come from an academy setup, so I signed there when I was like 17 and made my debut quickly, and I hadn't had the football education that other people you probably saw throughout my whole career. Technically, I wasn't as good as other people, but when I went down to Exeter, Alex Inglethorpe was the manager who I knew from my time at Leatherhead in the non-league, who, being honest with you, to this day, even going into the Premier League, he was the best coach that I've ever had. And he was amazing with me. And I actually went down there and just learnt my trade, as it were. I didn't play loads of games to start off. I just trained really hard. I was always the last one out there working on all parts of my game. So when I look back and go, and I was away from home, I loved it. I met amazing lads who I'm super tight with, still sort of friends for life. And just away from home playing football, I mean, being honest, it wasn't hard at all. I absolutely loved it.
You had a long career, long and successful. You've had a lot of strike partners, Jamie. I'm going to put you on the spot here. Who's your favourite strike partner and why? And also, I'd like to know, were you buddies or more sort of Sheringham and Cole?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's funny because we started off with strike partners with like a two and playing up front. But I quickly sort of evolved to playing more in a three and playing out wide. I was never really a number nine. I wasn't that natural in front of goal to be a number nine. So I think probably the one who I loved playing with was Heide Helgeson. He was a great guy, but also he was so good. He was amazing in the air, and I could just time my runs off him from outside to in. And I used to get in the whole time, and no one could pick me up because I think everyone assumed that the centre half would win the header, but he just hung in the air. He had a real good leap, and great guy to play with, great teammate. Yeah, I really enjoyed playing up front with him.
Jamie, I hope you'll indulge me in this. I'm a Forest fan. I want to know a little bit about what it was like at the club during the Fawaz Al-Hassawi era. Was it as crazy and as disorganised as we're led to believe?
Yeah, well, I wish I was involved last season, that is for sure. It was slightly different to that. So congratulations. It's great to see them in the Premier League. I had the opportunity to go and sign for Forest, which was a great chance for me to go and test myself at a club with that kind of history, and one I was looking forward to. And yeah, I think that, like I say, it's been well documented. I think that at the start of the season I went there, Billy Davis was the manager, and he actually assembled a really good squad. And I look back at my time and I think probably can echo the voice of players from the last sort of 20 years until now when they've gone back up, is that at the start, I really felt that we could do something. I think you've always got that feeling because of the size of the club and the fans there, that they're willing you to get to that position. But I just think it got to about Christmas time and there was a few key injuries with Chris Cohen, who was a brilliant player, Kelvin Wilson and a few others, and then it was just, yeah, off the park was certainly that, very disorganised. I think if you don't have the structure right from the top, then it's very hard to get success, and clearly they're doing the right things now.
Amy, my team, QPR, and your spell there, you'd have forgotten man in the Aguero game, aren't you? Because you got that goal. I remember watching it from Dubrovnik. I was away with my brother at the time and we were going mad because QPR had something on that game as well. What was that like as an occasion, considering there was huge pressure on Rangers as well that day?
Yeah, there was. And, you know, we talk about supporting a team growing up. I've kind of adopted QPR as my team now. Me and my little boy, we go the whole time. So we love the football club and it's great. And so ending up playing for him in that situation was ultimately the strangest experience, on the back of, like I said, we were forgotten in a way because we actually had to get a result to stay in the league. And effectively, that was like us winning the league. So there was so much on it. And in the end, we lost the game and stayed up by default. But yeah, an experience I've never had before on a football pitch. Just the atmosphere really changed when we got back into the game, and there were so many nerves from the City fans having not won the league. And it just gave us that little bit of extra something to hang on to. Obviously, I can't remember touching the ball very much, if any, in the game. I did a lot of running, but ended up getting on the end of the cross and shutting my eyes. And probably the strangest experience, but one of the best I had in my career after scoring that goal.
Yeah, an incredible game. Jamie, we always like to finish with something super serious. You've told us a lot about your career, but this is what I really want to know. Mackies, the artisanal ice cream producer that share your name from Scotland. These are the flavors that they do. I want to know your favorite. Traditional, which is vanilla, strawberry swirl, honeycomb, chocolate, chocolate mint, raspberry ripple, or Scottish tablet.
Oh, I don't know the last one. I'm not familiar with the last one.
All right.
One.
Well, according to Wikipedia, tablet is usually made from sugar, condensed milk and butter, which is boiled to a soft ball stage and allowed to crystallize. It's often flavored with vanilla and sometimes has nut pieces in it.
Does it come battered potentially as well?
I can't believe Jamie's got 8 caps for Scotland and I only made the B team and he doesn't know what tablet is. I've got to see your credentials, mate. Next time I see you, I've got to see you in a kilt.
I will go to answer your question. I'll go honeycomb would be my favourite. And I've got no relation to the ice cream company.
All right, it's a solid pick. If you'd gone for chocolate mint, you would have failed the fit and proper guest test. But I think, Adrian, Sam, what we're saying is Jamie passed?
All day long, yeah. Excellent work. Definitely passed.
Top quality stuff. You can come back again, mate.
Top man, mate. Thanks for having me on. I'd love to come back on again for sure.
Jamie, pleasure as all, lads. Have a great day. We'll speak to you soon.
Cheers, lads. Thank you.
Right, Adrian, you've picked Jezrin Rucksacki for your scouting report this week. On loan at Charlton from Crystal Palace, and he was on target for the second time this season this past weekend.
Yeah, he's 19. He scored twice now, 3 starts for Charlton Athletic. I think it's a real coup for Ben Garner and for Charlton to get this boy in at the Valley. A number of clubs wanted him, including Championship clubs, Birmingham and Cardiff. But Patrick Vieira and the Eagles, I think, have selected Ben Garner as a coach that they want their players to work with. And I think that's the way it is going forward at the moment. Find someone that you think can develop your player and you entrust them with that for the season. He's a guy, Rucksacki, that Palace see as a first teamer, 100%. He's just signed a 5-year contract. So those that are getting to watch him week in, week out are probably watching a Premier League player in waiting, someone that sooner or later will hit the big time. I've been really impressed with him. It's a little bit of Bukayo Saka vibes about him on that sort of right side of a front three. I think what sets him apart is that he's got a bit of an unpredictable edge around him. You know, you never quite know what's going to happen. Good dribbler, can go on the inside, can go on the outside, travels at pace. And at the weekend against Wickham, he was the only real live wire for Charlton. He scored a goal, lovely goal actually, controlled it in the box, swivel past a player and then lashed it into the top corner. He set up the best chance of the game as well on the back of a buccaneering run. It's exciting. My son, actually, I'm going to name check another member of my family. My son's seen him twice in the flesh this season because he's down in Kent at the moment and he loves football like my dad does. He just goes to watch games. And he said that what sets him apart from others at that level is his off-the-ball movement. He's always looking to find little pockets of space, makes darting runs that catch defenders sleeping. So he's a young player with talent, but also a very good football brain. And he's also hardworking, he's a presser. So I think he's won as many tackles as he's beaten players with take-ons this season. So he's a manager's dream, I think, Jezrin Rucksacki. So yeah, I think he's a name to look out for. And I think Charlton fans are in for a treat watching him over the next few months.
England under 20 international, but he's still eligible to play for Ghana. His brother Sam is in Chelsea's academy as we speak. Sam Parkin, you've picked another young player with an excellent name, Sinclair Armstrong of QPR, brought from Shamrock Rovers a few years back, but you think he might be able to make an impact on the Championship this season?
This lad is just great fun if no one's seen him. I've seen QPR twice this year at Charlton in the League Cup and against Blackpool at home. And both times he just raised the volume levels in the stadium beyond belief as soon as he gets warmed up, essentially now. He's that impactful from the bench. Electric pace, chases lost causes. He's very much a plan B right now because we know the way that QPR set up, the way they set up previously under Warburton, the way they're setting up under Beale. Chair and Willock have got to be in the team. Roberts looks like he's going to be there as well. So it only leaves room for one centre forward. And Dykes has got the shirt at the moment. and Sinclair Armstrong's one deficiency so far has been finishing chances. He's had four attempts in his 74 minutes that he's had on the pitch, and a couple of them have been big chances, glaring opportunities, one at the end of the Blackpool game, and he's just not had that calmness. He's not had that technical ability in the pressure moments to get up and running. It's going to come. I'm sure it is, because he's getting in great positions. But as of yet, he's just not quite had that composure. So it is going to be sporadic game time off the bench, but it gives QPR a nice option when they go to the two, especially late in games. Dykes can essentially stay central, and this guy has got incredible mobility, incredible desire. He pulls wide, especially on the left-hand side, and get to the byline and provide deliveries. And it gives the other centre forward the ability to just stay central, stay in the 18-yard box. So Mick Beale said he's not going to be going on loan. The fans are absolutely delighted by that. But I back Mick Beale to say we have to be patient with this lad. We can't put too much on his shoulders because of the lack of experience and the lack of goal scoring now. He needs to improve in that regard. That will happen. And I'm sure he's going to become a regular feature for Rangers, which the supporters will absolutely love. They've got, you know, a few players around the fringe of the first team now. Chair, of course, one of the mainstays of the first team. And the supporters are incredibly excited about this lad, and rightly so.
All right, that's Jezirin Rakšaki and Sinclair Armstrong, two to watch in the EFL this season. And another scouting report for you next week. Coming up next today, we'll take a quick look at some of the big games in prospect this weekend. All right, slightly tricky to do this in some regards because of the midweek matches. We're not going to focus on them. We're going straight to the weekend. In the Championship, we're looking at Rotherham against Watford. Sam, I'm a massive Paul Warne fan, even more so after listening to Moment of Truth. How's he getting on? His latest attempt to keep Rotherham in the Championship seems to have started rather well.
It's been an unbelievable start. Unbeaten. Just the two goals conceded. Felt like a familiar source of those goals, didn't it, last weekend against Birmingham? I was surprised to hear that that's Richard Wood's first brace, I think, in the EFL. So he's got two, I think, in a playoff final, which quite a lot of people would argue was more important. So he's been a regular source of goals. I think he's going to be complemented beautifully by Grant Hall and this lad Humphreys, I think, was once at Manchester City. He's getting a lot of plaudits for his footballing ability playing out, which you maybe wouldn't associate with Rotherham. So I'm not saying there's been a full-scale overhaul of the playing style, but I think there's a little few differences, a few little different intricacies. And with a front two, which I've spoken about before, of Washington and Ogbene, you know, that's different. That's very mobile. You've always had a Michael Smith in a Paul Warne side, and you may have a Tom Eaves later on this season. But for the moment, they're playing a little bit differently, playing in behind teams, playing down the side of sides, and they've had a formidable start to the season. So I see this one on the back of Watford's previous Championship season and the way they've started this one, probably going to be very low scoring, I would suggest, and maybe decided by a set piece.
We're recording, Adrian, before Watford play Middlesbrough on Tuesday, but I'm going to generously say it's been a mixed bag for Rob Edwards so far. No wins in four going into their midweek match after QPR pinched the points from the Vicarage on Saturday.
Yeah, I saw them in the flesh at Birmingham and wasn't that impressed with them, really. João Pedro was easily the best player. Yasser Espria actually looked pretty good, the teenager playing in behind the front guys. But yeah, no, it's been a strange start because João Pedro and Ismail Assar, 1 minute they're staying, 1 minute they're going. He doesn't really know where he stands, Rob Edwards. So it'll be fascinating to see if they play or not. I do think Hamza Chowdhury is a good addition. They win the ball back and recycle it nicely. I think it's a tough game for them because Rob Edwards wants to play with a 3-4-1-2 that he had at Forest Green. I'm not convinced he's got the right centre-halves to do it because I think centre-halves need to be comfortable in the wide areas, and I'm not sure Watford's are. So that's a problem. He went to a back four at the weekend. I don't like the new signings at the moment. Menaj and Bio, they don't look like they're going to score very many goals in the Championship. So this is going to be a tough ask for them. I think they'll need Pedro and then need Saar playing. Maybe they'll make the difference. Just as a quick other point, bit naughty, I think, of Watford this week. Hassan Kamara has been sold to Udinese for £16 million. Is he worth £16 million, Sam? I mean, I think they bought him for four a year ago. No, in January. And he's been loaned straight back. Obviously, Udinese, owned by the same owner, you know, owned by the same family. It's I think they could get into trouble for it. I really do. But, you know, maybe they can circumnavigate the rules. But yeah, that's one that other championship clubs will be looking at and saying, hang on, that's not right. It smells fishy.
We'll keep an eye on that as the season goes on. In League One, there's the Darren Moore / Yorkshire Derby at Hillsborough, where Sheffield Wednesday host Barnsley. Sam, Wednesday looking pretty ominous, aren't they? Banging in the goals at one end, but also clean sheets in 6 of 8 in all comps this season.
Yeah, there was a long period back end of last season when he didn't have enough options defensively. He had to play fullbacks at centre-half, and now you're looking at the aforementioned, if people listened last week, Iorfa, Ahinkwe.
Well done, Sam.
And McGinnis as well. I think I butchered that, McGinnis. So that's a really strong back three. And they've got probably one of the best strike pairings in the division, I think, Windus and Gregory for League One. They've got this formidable home record. I think it's 33 goals in the last 11 games, which they're unbeaten in at Hillsborough. So, yeah, it's looking really good. I don't think Darren Moore's probably, you know, as good as some of his opposite numbers in terms of tactical flexibility and so on. But I think this is a really good squad of players. I think it's a good manager. And I think they're in a rich vein of form right now. So tough game for Barnsley, but they showed incredible resilience, organisation to bounce back from that Wickham defeat to get a really well-earned point at Ipswich. So tough game on the face of it. Again, probably be tight, but imagine there'll be more goals in the previous fixture we previewed.
Yeah, I don't fancy Barnsley too much here. Yeah, look, they got a good draw at Ipswich. It was resilient. Away record's been so bad, though, hasn't it? I think they lost 16 of their previous 19 away league games. I still think they're a bit light up top. I know Aitchison scored the other day. But yeah, I don't see anywhere near the same firepower from Barnsley that I see in Sheffield Wednesday's team. They've been a bit unlucky, Barnsley. They keep conceding world-class goals. They keep, yeah, being on the receiving end of some cracking efforts. But yeah, Duff is a good manager. He'll get them working well. I think they're pressing nicely, but they lack a bit of quality, I think, compared to Sheffield Wednesday. So I'd fancy a home win at Hillsborough.
In League Two, two teams, two divisions apart last season, face off at Edgeley Park. Stockport County hosting AFC Wimbledon in the first ever meeting between the two teams, according to my old friend Soccer Base. Adrian, who's under the most pressure to get promoted this season out of these two teams? Because a lot of talk around Stockport, wasn't there, Priest?
Yeah, I would say Dave Challoner. I would. I think Wimbledon have obviously got ambitions to go straight back up, but I don't think it's essential for Johnny Jackson to do that. It's been a poor start from Stockport, given that they were the bookies favourites. They've had a good week, though. Brilliant goalless draw with Leicester in the Carabao Cup. I mean, what tremendous effort, because Leicester had an outstanding starting 11 there and they took them all the way to penalties. Then, of course, they came back from 1-0 down with 10 men to draw with Swindon. Paddy Madden was sent off for a daft little stamp. So it's been a decent week for them. But they're not in a good place, Stockport. They're not where they want to be. They conceded, I think, 9 of their 10 goals from open play, which tells you they're loose at the back. They've used 22 players in 6 games, which I think is a monstrous amount after so soon in the start of a season. And I think they're obviously light on goals. They probably do with the centre-forward coming into the building. So, yeah, not great times for Stockport. It's quite a big game, I sense, for Challoner. They need to build on the momentum they've got from those sort of creditable draws.
Your mate Johnny Jackson, Sam, is the man in charge of AFC Wimbledon these days. Nice symmetry to their form so far in League Two. Drawn 2, won 2, lost 2. How's he feeling ahead of this challenge, and what kind of expectations do you think there are on him and Wimbledon this season? Do they need to bounce straight back, or are they a bit more realistic?
I would think within the club, of course, they want to be challenging, and there's probably expectation to be around the playoff mix. outside, I don't think that they've been amongst anyone's favourites. So I think that probably is a nice thing. I think that there isn't the expectation from outside, and a lot of noise about Wimbledon should be up there and should be doing better. Inconsistent, yeah. I think to the start of this season, I think there's been a lot to like about the football, and I think the supporters are generally pretty encouraged, especially some of the younger players. Sounds like Curry got injured at the weekend. He's been a big plus point. Davison and Young Coombs as a front pairing is really exciting. I think for 45 minutes at the weekend, we saw that against Barrow. They didn't play particularly well for the other 45 minutes. The introductions of Harry Pell, new signing, and Asau off the bench was really impactful as well. So I think they got the makings of a good team. They just need to find that consistency. And going away to Stockport, who I think are very light on goal scorers, are not particularly creative right now. It's a game that Wimbledon, considering they scored two at Mansfield the other day, should have probably won that game. They can be optimistic that they can get some points in Greater Manchester. I think I've got my geography right.
Just about, yeah. We'll see how they get on this weekend. We'll react to the best of the weekend's action in next week's pod. We're nearly done for today. A couple of things that caught our eye before we go, though. Ben Cabango getting sent off for getting them with Isaiah Jones doing keepy-ups in that Middlesbrough-Swansea game. It was pretty good, but I think Cabango, if he'd waited 24 hours, could have taken some tips from Brendan Johnson on how to do that a little bit more subtly so you don't get sent off by the referee. Now, we mentioned this earlier. Sure, listener, you saw the video that did the rounds on social media last week of West Brom's Daryl DK, really good goal scorer, but doesn't know how to finish in some senses, as in he doesn't know how to use finish tablets effectively. He'd been trying to wash his clothes with them, Clarkie, rather than his dishes. Now, this brings to mind a young Clark and Parkin both making their way in the game away from home for the first time. I'm sure you've done something similar.
It's a brilliant story. I loved it. I mean, how many months he'd been washing his clothes in dishwasher? It's remarkable, really, that he's only just realised. But yeah, look, I've got no common sense. I still haven't got any, really. But as a young man, I was that kid. I was that kid who didn't have a Scooby. And yeah, there was a time when I was away from home where I'm too embarrassed to say it. I did try and cook a tin of baked beans in a tin in the microwave. And my mates who were with me just stopped me at the very opportune moment. And there was another time as well where I couldn't work out how to use nail clippers. I'd always been a scissors man, and the nail clippers, I just couldn't do it. And I was trying to force it, without the swingy bit of the nail clipper that gives you the leverage. I was trying to force it without that to cut my nails, and I got busted doing it. And my mates have brought that up a few times down the years. So yeah, I'm a bit of a DK, I've got to say.
Wow, incredible stuff. Can you make Daryl DK feel any better, Sam?
I think me and Clarkie are more similar than we think. I think nail clippers have always been an Achilles heel for me.
I'm relieved to hear that.
For someone whose father loves a glass of Pinot Noir like no one other, I struggled for years to open a bottle of wine as well, much to my embarrassment. I still do things like Daryl DK most days of my life now, but the one that kind of sticks out for me was getting a plumber over once because I thought I had no hot water. Came over, scratched his head for 20 minutes in my kitchen under the stairs. You haven't got a tap running, have you, Sam? No, don't be stupid. Come on, I haven't got a tap running. What do you think I am? It went upstairs. It was just a tap in the upstairs bathroom on full blast like that. Yeah, I'll send you the invoice, Sam.
All right. Well, look, if you make a basic error like that, be humble like Daryl DK and admit it on social media, but do it with your top off. If you've got a decent body, because then, I don't know, maybe you'll get more likes or something. Hey, Clarkie, before we go, I need to hear quickly about you meeting Logan Paul, who for people of our age, you might not know, but is a big deal. He's a YouTuber. He's an influencer. He's now a wrestler too. And he was touchline at the Emirates with you on Saturday.
Ah, yeah. You love me. Yeah. We got on really well, actually. He was quite a funny guy. I must admit, until last week, he'd sort of passed me by. Various people told me that he's one of the most famous people on earth. So, and around the Emirates, people were all over him. But yeah, no, I teed him up nicely in our little interview pitch. I asked him what colour North London was, and he came up with a correct answer, which was great for us. So we got our little line for social media. But then he proceeded to say, "Oh, well, can I ask you a question?" And I said, "All right." He goes, "What do you think of Tottenham?" And of course, we all know that what Arsenal fans think of Tottenham is shit. But I couldn't say it, of course. And I fumbled around and sort of went, not good. But you know what I mean. And he was cracking up at me cringing. So no, it was good fun, and I liked him. And I've seen him clips of him wrestling, and he doesn't look bad. I mean, you're the aficionado, though.
No, yeah, he's taken to it. Pretty quickly. I'm amazed he didn't ask anything about your time at Stevenage, but there we go. Just googled it. Sam, I'm not sure how familiar you are with Logan Paul, but net worth $45 million. That's only about a tenner less than you, isn't it?
People still listening. I went to the toilet during that 2 minutes. Never going to get that back, am I? I prefer Richard Logan, the old Exeter centre forward, once of Ipswich.
Okay,
soccer man.
That's going to do it for this, the second ever episode of What the EF. Follow us on Twitter, please, at EFL What The is the place to go to do so. And if you want to sponsor the show, then hit us up on email. whattheefl@yahoo.com is the place to go and do it. Many thanks to Jamie Mackie for being with us earlier today, and to Adrian and Sam for their contributions too. We'll catch up with you same time next week. Until then, have a great week. We'll speak to you soon.